I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, sports writer for The Nation and edgeofsports.com Dave Zirin, and Johns Hopkins political science professor and blogger Lester Spence. Take it, Jimmy.
Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we doing this morning?
Hey.
Good, man. Doing great.
Yeah, man, just making it work. Okay, well, you know what? Let's jump right in now. Monday, Border Patrol agents along the U.S.-Mexico border got into a confrontation with teenage Mexican boys allegedly throwing rocks at them. Now, it ended with the fatal shooting of one of them. He was reportedly on the Mexico side of the border, Michelle.
You know, this has been an ongoing story, and we reported on it yesterday, too, with a reporter from there. But Attorney General Eric Holder expressed, quote, regret for the shooting. I mean, it's still being investigated. Obviously, this is a very tragic incident, but, Jimmy, you've just got to ask if throwing stones at federal agents, you know, was that an appropriate use of force? I don't think it's unreasonable to ask that question. Do you, Jimmy?
I don't. What I do think is I wonder, do they have a less than lethal option? You know, like rubber bullets? I mean, if we have to protect the border, can we have some options?
Mm-hmm. Ruben, have you done any? You've done some reporting on this. Tell us what you're finding out.
I have. Here's what I've picked up about the incidents are called rockings, you know, that's referred to by the Border Patrol agents. I've been down to the border in three different places, in Arizona, in Texas, and in California over the last 10 years, 15 years. And in the last decade or so, I've been hearing more, in the last 7, 8 years, more concerns from the Border Patrolmen about rockings. And it took me a while, I think, because I've never been in a position where I've, you know, been on the border having people throw rocks across the border saying, nah, 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 you can't get me because I'm on the other side of the border. And it took me a while to take this seriously. But as I started to, because after all, what rocks and bullets, right? Rocks and bullets. But the more I thought about it, and the more I heard about it, the more I spoke to these Border Patrol agents, it's a very serious deal. People get hurt from the rockings. But also, if somebody knocks you out, they have access to your weapon at that point. Basically, they throw a rock, you're unconscious, they take your weapon around, and they kill you. And the next thing you know, they're handing your spouse a folded flag at a funeral.
I hear you.
So. So this is very serious. This is a very serious deal. And these kids started off on the U.S. side. They ran across to the Mexican side thinking immunity, started throwing the rocks. The agents have a right to protect themselves. There should be an investigation. Good for Holder. But I've talked to some very sober Border Patrol agents and supervisors who say we need to take this rocking stuff seriously.
Well, that's an important perspective. I mean, that's an important perspective on that. And Lester, what about you? Do you have any thoughts on this?
From what I understand, the percentage of rockings are only like 3%, and that's actually gone down. I think there is something to be said for protecting people in the Border Patrol from these types of events. But I think what's also going on is we've got this narrative about the border being unsafe and that we're somehow under attack. And this type of incident is kind of the natural consequence of how we interpret how we articulate what's like kind of this constructed crisis.
Well, except that there's a lot of violence along the border, not necessarily on the U.S. side, but I mean, we've also reported on that. I mean, the fact is that there were two people who were connected to the consulate who were shot to death only a couple of weeks ago. So there's not imagined violence along the border. It's not necessarily related to border crossing, but the fact that there are, you know, the kidnappings, all of that other thing, that's not imagined.
Well, it's a okay, so we've got 3 out of 100 officers that are hit by rocks. Imagine that. So let's think about that situation. So for those 3 officers, it's not imagined. It's real, right? But we can blow that 3% up in our heads where we're thinking it's 15, 20, 30%. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, those are two good
perspectives.
Well,
there's more to it than rocks.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's Molotov cocktails. I was on the phone just yesterday with a friend of mine, Mike Fisher, who's the head of the Border Patrol in the entire country based in D.C., used to be based in San Diego, and he reminded me that there are Molotov cocktails that are thrown across the border. There was a time where they would set up wire booby traps where, you know, the idea was to decapitate an agent as he was going by in a, an off-road vehicle. And the reason is this is a serious thing. This isn't just like random kids. They're paid money by the drug smugglers. Okay, wow. They're paid money by the drug smugglers to distract the agents, and to attack the agents so that you can move the drugs off someplace else down the border way. So this is not a toy. This is not a game. This is people who are being employed by serious bad guys to hurt, decapitate, kill agents, distract the agents, so I can move my drugs down way.
I think those are two important perspectives, but we got to move on. I think it's two important perspectives on this issue. I think that shows why the importance of reporting and kind of digging into a story as opposed to just kind of taking the first headline that comes along. So obviously we'll hear more about this. If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Dave Zirin, and Lester Spence. Back to you, Jimmy.
All right. Well, thanks, Michelle. Moving right along, on Tuesday, President Obama sat down with NBC's Today Show to talk about the Gulf oil spill and his handling of the bigwigs at BP, Michelle.
You know, I remember how last week we were talking about whether people felt he had been emotional enough or passionate enough about this. And I'll just play a short clip of what he had to say to NBC. Here it is.
I would love to just spend a lot of my time venting and yelling at people. But that's not the job I was hired to do. My job is to solve this problem. And ultimately, this isn't about me and how angry I am. Ultimately, this is about the people down in the Gulf who are being impacted. And what am I doing to make sure that they are able to salvage their way of life? And that's going to be the main focus that I've got in the weeks and months ahead.
That was what he said on CNN first, and then that was what sparked this idea, oh, he's too emotional, he's too passionless about this. And then he talked to NBC, and here's what he had to say then. Here it is.
I was down there a month ago, before most of these talking heads were even paying attention to the Gulf. A month ago, I was meeting with fishermen down there, standing in the rain, talking about what a potential crisis this could be. And I don't sit around just talking to experts because this is a college seminar. We talk to these folks because they potentially have the best answers.
And, of course, that ends with the president saying, so now I know who's blank to kick. So, you know, so, Jimmy, the reason I'm curious about your thoughts on this, because last week you said as an African-American man, the president cannot get visibly upset. You're saying his tone would suggest that he's, you know, that he's out of control or that this just would not be well tolerated. So now what do you think? Do you think that he's calibrating this better or what do you
know what? You know what, Michelle? There seemed to be some call for him to get down on big oil with great vengeance and furious anger, you know, Sam Jackson style, right? You know,
Spike Lee, just go off. Spike Lee.
Right. And there was my fear that he was going to get barbershop style and start dropping F-bombs and just clock. But you know what? He gave us a really purely American outrage. I'm going to tell you how. Because you know what? Butt kicking is American. You know what I mean? It isn't Ron O'Neill. It isn't Jim Brown. It doesn't have that kind of type of affect. You know, Shaft kick butt, John Wayne kick butt, real
Love
American
it.
Heroes kick butt. So it was a safe show of emotion, devoid of any cold or idiomatic confusion. Look, no one wants an angry black man in the White House. But what's more American than having a butt kicker in the Oval Office? You tell me, Michelle.
I don't know.
That's a
difficult question. Because one of the left, the progressives, have been very critical of Obama of late, and this is one of the things they've been critical about. They feel that he's not demonstrating. I don't know. I don't think it's just about emotion. They have how much emotion he's been showing, but they feel that he should have been more proactive around this crisis in a number of areas. Lester, how about you? Tell us what you think.
I think there is something to be said for using affect in politics, and the left hasn't really. We haven't had people on the left to take up arms as people on the right have. But the challenge is that unless that affect is actually combined with real politics, what you have is sound but no fury, right? I mean, so in this case, there are a number of things that Obama could have done before, even up to now, whether talking about policy, whether you're talking about supporting political officials that support regulation. And he's done none of that, like on purpose. So him talking about whose blank he wants to kick doesn't really impress me.
Ruben, where are you in the outrage-o-meter?
Yeah, you know, maybe I spend too much time listening to people who I frankly have a lot of respect for, who are rooted in this crisis, like Mary Matlin and James Carville, who live in New Orleans with their daughters and who keep going on television and blasting away at the president and others for not being vocal enough and maybe for being too trusting of BP. A lot of folks think BP has really dealt in bad faith, have been lying about the crisis allegedly and also giving false information about the estimates and things of how much oil is being spilled out and all that. So maybe we shouldn't be in business with BP to begin with. But I feel for those folks who are on the ground, including a lot of Democrats who supported Barack Obama. So when Spike Lee said, sometimes you just need to go off and this is an opportunity to go off, I had a flashback to the pain that came down on the first George W. Bush when he seemed to be neglectful during the L.A. riots,
right,
and during Hurricane Andrew. And then on the second W. Bush on Katrina. But also to the credit that a lot of folks gave Bill Clinton for doing well during the Oklahoma City bombing. So what we're talking about here is that people expect of their president a certain amount of emotion and investment in a crisis. And so it's a good thing that he canceled his trip to Indonesia to stay and focus on the Gulf. It's a good thing that he's invested. It's a good thing he's talking about who's, you know, butt to kick. Okay, well, I feel for those folks who say this is still not enough. They want the president invested. I think he's moving in the right direction, Michelle. I think that people don't want somebody who's passionateless in this job,
okay,
and they like the new president.
Can you just take Jimmy's question on this? He says, look, you know, the rules are different for a man of color, whether you like
there's
it
no
or
doubt
not.
Jimmy's
so do
right.
you think
there's no doubt he's right. There's no doubt he's right. But at the same time, I mean, what's the flip side? I mean, I agree that this idea of an angry black man is a double-edged sword here, but they don't want someone who seems above the office. Mm. When I saw the president get animated, it was because he was talking about trying to get LeBron to leave Cleveland to go to Chicago.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
That's where he gets passionate.
That's
okay.
Cool.
That's where he gets, I'm into that. You know,
Dave, are you there?
Show me that you're passionate about this.
Dave, are you there? Where are you on the outrage meter?
Yeah, look, there are two ways in which passion is allowed and sometimes it's not allowed. I thought it was interesting that William Kristol, people know who he is, the former chief of staff for Dan Quayle, Fox News talking head. He then jumped in and tried to one-up Obama and say, real men know who's butt to kick. Of course, he didn't say butt. Now, let's leave aside the fact that Bill Kristol looks like the kind of guy who wasn't picked for kickball in elementary school and doesn't seem to have a political policy that doesn't end with bombing brown people.
Oh,
I find it interesting that Bill
Kristol
gets to
actually... I'm just saying.
It's the barbershop.
This isn't I'm throwing a flag. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The barbershop. You've been in a barbershop.
Hey.
I wasn't picked for kickball either.
I got a flag for LeBron, okay? If I got a flag for LeBron, then you got one for that.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
But Dave,
I'm just saying,
point.
Like, we're not going to solve the crisis by trying to out-macho each other either. We need real solutions to a real devastating crisis.
I got you. Before I let you go, can I just ask Lester about the whole Alvin Green situation in South Carolina? We talked about that a little earlier in the program. Comes from nowhere, unemployed veteran, you know, is the first, from what we can tell, the first African-American to win a statewide major party nomination in South Carolina, and the guy's not answering his phone now. What's up with that?
Yeah, I think there's a real opening for Democrat progressives to come up with really, really strong candidates, and he's not one of them, obviously. But the fact that he can get as far as he can, as he did, shows that if progressives organize, that there's this other world that's possible.
Is he a progressive?
Lester.
But the fact that he got as far as he did.
Wait a second, you know, Lester. Let me jump in here and say this. So Lester, I smell some kind of prank here. You know, I call Manchurian plumber on this joint, man. I'm not buying it.
Oh, you don't think he's legit at all?
What do you see? Tell me.
I don't think he's legit at all. You mean some unemployed dude spends, you know, a grip, you know, trying to get on the ballot, then he wins. Nah, out of nowhere. You know what this sounds like? It sounds like the Eddie Murphy movie, The Distinguished Gentleman. You know, where homeboy got on the ballot and got over with the name recognition.
That is the truth. I was thinking the same thing, but I was afraid to say it.
Chris Rock did this interview when Barack Obama was about to win the presidency, and Larry King asked him, are you proud that a black man is about to become president, perhaps? And Chris Rock said, not just that it's any black man. I wouldn't be proud if Flavor Flav was about to be president.
Yeah. And right on.
Ouch. I'm just trying to make this. Yeah, you see where
I hear you. We got a couple minutes left, Dave. We got to talk about World Cup. Tell us. Are you?
Wow.
Please tell me you're watching it.
I'm losing my mind over this. I got my Vuvuzela right here. It's a little over the top. But, you know, if people want to know my picks, I really like an Argentina team bringing it together and taking it home. I also like Holland, which is like the Phoenix Suns for people who like basketball. They play like the Phoenix Suns. Very exciting stuff. I really want to encourage people, though, to embrace the joys of neutrality. You don't have to root for a team to enjoy the World Cup. Just go to your nearest bar and hang out. It's an experience like nothing else.
What are you talking about? Of course you want to root for a team, man. What's the point? There's shopping to be doing. You could be buying jerseys. What's wrong right. with you? Well, what about the U.S. team? What are the U.S. team's chances? They take on England in the opening round tomorrow.
As everyone always says, in 1950, the United States beat England 1-0, and the fact that we have to look back to 1950 says something about United States soccer.
So, let's get it on, baby. It's payback for the BP oil spill. It's time to pay back the oil spill, man.
Right.
We're going to take it to another level.
Ruben, are you watching? Are you going to be watching?
I watch a little bit of it. It's fun stuff. I got to tell you, it's fun. The crowds are amazing. It's really fun to watch. I would just tell you, I hope Mexico doesn't win, because if Mexico wins, about 38 states are going to pass laws to outlaw Spanish. It's going to get bad.
And outlaw soccer.
Lester, are you watching?
Yeah, I'm rooting for Detroit.
Right, Bangladesh, baby. It's our year.
I'm glad one person is rooting for Detroit.
Jimmy, are you watching? Nice. Show some class. Come on, I know you're a man of international appeal.
Here we go.
I know you're going to watch it.
Well, you know what? I haven't really been down with soccer since, you know, I lost my Pele lunchbox. But, you know, my significant other, she's rocking with South Africa. So I got to go with that, right?
Okay. And do you have your vuvuzela? Right. You got it?
I guess.
He doesn't even know what I'm talking about.
I didn't know that.
Thank you. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book, The Denzel Principle. He was kind enough to join us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego. Dave Zirin is a sports writer for The Nation and EdgeOfSports.com. He's also the author of the forthcoming book, Bad Sports, How Owners Are Ruining the Games We Love. He joined us from Washington. Lester Spence is a blogger and political science professor at Johns Hopkins University. He joined us from our studios in Washington. Gentlemen, thank you.
Peace.
Thank you. Yep.